Why did you come here today?
Well, because I've done very well with the vote. I love the people. They're incredible. They're energetic. They're entrepreneurial. And they're going to save New York. And we're going to win New York. And if we win New York, the election's over. We take over the country. We take over the country.
You think you're going to win?
I think we have a chance to win New York. It hasn't been done in, you know, many, many decades as a Republican. I think we have a very good chance.
This is the Dana Show. It is a Friday before Memorial Day weekend. Hope you have a great weekend ahead for you. My name is Rich Zioli in for Dana today. Great to be with you. I broadcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD in Philadelphia. And I'll tell you what, I know that Trump would rather be spending his time in Pennsylvania because it's the must-win state. It will decide the presidency. But he's certainly making the most out of his time in New York, is he not? And the Democrats are not happy. They are not pleased. Even Governor Kathy Hochul calling her own constituents idiots for going to the rally. I mean, these people don't learn, whether it's deplorables or all the other names they call us. They don't get it. They don't get it. People don't like to be talked down to and put down. That's why you see a lot of Democrats who came out to the rally in the South Bronx. And they said, hey, Biden's done nothing for us. He's done nothing for us. And we're out. We're off the train. We're done. Think about it in terms of the optics of this rally in the South Bronx, appealing to working class people, to black voters, to Latino voters, and right in the heart of the blue, blue New York. And the left is constantly saying that Trump supporters are a bunch of white supremacist, KKK, MAGA hat wearing neo-Nazis, and that Trump is Hitler and blah, blah, blah. So when you see the Puerto Rican black president or council member from New York City stand on the stage next to Trump last night and endorse him for president in his broken English, as to put it, I just kept thinking, you know, this whole Hitler narrative, it just doesn't. But even today, I saw on social media, you know, idiots writing things like pictures from the Trump rally, and they would put pictures of Hitler and the Reich. You keep doing this stuff, and you wonder why you lose, right? I mean, you wonder why you lose. You just mock and insult people. Nobody likes to be mocked and insulted in life, and yet the left does this constantly to people. How many times now have you heard people, whether it's Jamie Dimon or James Carville or Bill Maher, say, stop it already. Enough. Stop with the name calling. When are you people going to learn? Stop insulting people for their political views if they're different from yours. You're not going to win hearts and minds. It's like the idiots that shut down traffic for their cause, whatever their cause is. Whatever your cause is, even if I agree with you, if you shut down traffic and make me late, I hate you and I hate your cause. For example, for me, this weekend going into Memorial Day weekend, you may be making pizza at home. I make pizza at home. I find pineapple pizza to be a disgrazia. I find it to be just an affront to my culture, my people, the Italians. And if you were having an anti-pineapple people rally and you shut down my commute, I would order a pineapple pizza. That's how much I hate you if you make me late. But it's the same thing with the Democrats and their deplorables, and you're a bunch of racists and you can't read. You ever argue with somebody in social media? Which you shouldn't do. It's just not worth it. But if you do, what's the first thing they say to you typically?
You're dumb. You don't read. If you read a book, I know you MAGA people don't know how to read, but you know.
And they love those insults. The I'm smarter than you. I'm better than you. I'm more well-read than you. And that's exactly the problem the Democrats have. So a couple of months ago, James Carville, who is a very smart guy, got a president elected. And unlike George Stephanopoulos, he doesn't pretend to be unbiased. Yeah, he's as blue as you get. But he talked to Maureen Dowd at the New York Times, and he said, you know, the problem right now for the Democrats is they listen to a lot of elite academic women. And let's face it, these are white liberal women, right? Not even liberals, white leftist women. And they've been lectured to about what to eat, what not to eat. You know, as Carville said, go eat your peas, you know, for the climate. It don't eat hamburgers, eat plant-based burgers. And he said, as a result of this now, the Democrat Party, it comes across that you're talking down to people, you're insulting us, and you're losing men, particularly black men. They don't want to hear this crap anymore. But if the party, if the Democrat Party has become the party of the faculty lounge, well, the faculty lounge, they always think they're the smartest people in the room. Professors with their PhDs and their EDs and everything else, they always think they are the smartest people in the room. If you went to college, or if you didn't go to college, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So it makes sense that the party that has become the party of the faculty lounge and has completely abandoned white working class voters and black working class voters and Latino working class voters and has decided to choose to associate with elite white, for the most part, lefties at universities would be the party that would then start mocking people and insulting their intelligence. It makes perfect sense. And it's also why Joe Biden is trying to bribe everybody with a student loan debt repayment scam. And the other day, Karine Jean-Pierre was asked about this from that NBC News reporter who asked her. He said, "You know, what about the plumbers and the electricians and all the people that didn't go to college and all the debt they have?" And Karine Jean-Pierre said, "Well, yeah, but the people with college loans are being literally crushed by debt." And he said, "Well, not literally." She said, "Well, I mean," because she said literally crushed to death, as if giant. You know, pallets of money were crushing these people. It's a figure of speech. It's not literal. It's figuratively, but I don't want to do what the left does and mock somebody for their choice of words or their grammar. But the point that he was making was, what about all these other people? If you're a working class guy or gal and you may owe money on your truck, maybe you got to buy tools this weekend and you're going to take advantage of Memorial Day sales, but you got to throw it on the credit card. Nobody's coming to help you. No one's coming to bail you out. If you're just people that work for a living, you have a mortgage, you got college debt, whatever it is, they're not coming to bail you out either. They're coming to bail out the elite college kids whose parents have a lot of money and the kids who will wind up going to make, statistically speaking, with degrees, will make more money in their life. Over the course of their lifetime, they'll make more money. That's who the Democrats are trying to bail out now. And the reason why is because Joe Biden has not locked down his crazy base. And his crazy base consists of a lot of these college kids who are protesting and having their encampments and everything else. So if you can't win them, you can't win them over, you bribe them. You bribe them. It's the old way. It's the Jersey way. It's the Philly way. You bribe them. It's the Chicago way. If I can't convince you to vote for me because you don't like my policies, you don't think I'm left enough on climate, you don't think I'm left enough on hating Israel, you don't think I'm left enough on whatever, well, then how about some money? How about that? Does it make it better? How about a nice bag of cash? In the old days, you give them a bag of cash. Now you send them a government check. That's what you do now to these elite college kids in places like Michigan and Pennsylvania, where Joe Biden is hemorrhaging votes. Hemorrhaging votes. And then when you come back to the South Bronx and you think about the rally and you think about seeing black voters and Hispanic voters there and all these other people that are there to support Trump because they think the Democrat Party has abandoned them. I guess one woman I heard yesterday, she said, the reporter asked her, said, "Well, Joe Biden says if you don't vote for me, you ain't black." And she said, "Well, then I guess I identify as a white male. I don't know what to tell you." She said, "I'm a mom. I have kids. I care about policy. I don't really care what people think of me. And I'm tired of Biden and Trump's better." There's a lot of people that feel that way at this point in time. And it's why Trump's doing as well as he's doing in the swing states. And it's why he's now winning with the Hispanic vote and outperforming with the black vote on track, as Harry Anton from CNN put it, on track now to do better than any Republican has ever done with the black vote. Now, the last time a Republican won New York was Ronald Reagan. And I don't think Trump needs to win New York, and I'm not really particularly worried about it. And if the campaign asked my opinion, I'd say focus all your resources in Pennsylvania and Michigan, because you win those two and it's game over. I think Trump easily, not easily, but I think he wins Georgia, he wins North Carolina. I think the question is Nevada and Arizona, but he doesn't need to win those states. He wins Georgia, he wins North Carolina, he wins Michigan, he wins Pennsylvania. He's got more than enough that he needs. And you know. But hey, look, the Wildwood rally in Jersey, which I went to, was not about trying to win Jersey. And the South Bronx rally was not about trying to win New York. It was about sending a message. In Wildwood, the message was, hey, look at the roller coaster behind me. I know that this is a much more affordable family vacation in the Wildwoods of South Jersey compared to the Hamptons of New York. South Bronx, working class people, people that don't live in snooty hipsterville like Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and you know the east side of Manhattan, or I guess the east side has some Republicans in it, but the west side of Manhattan, you know, like the Village and all those cool, hip, trendy places, Soho. And it's about people that actually work for a living. And that's who Trump appeals to. And that's what this election's about, because the Democrat Party has forgotten about working class people. Well, think about it. You can't be all in on climate change, for example, and the Green New Deal, and then pretend like you care about working class people. Working class people work in the energy sector. A lot of them need to fill their trucks with gasoline. A lot of them work in natural gas. A lot of them build cars, and they know that EVs mean they lose jobs. And so if you embrace the climate change agenda because you want to please the academics at the faculty lounge, you're going to tick off the working class voters. That's just a fact. And then if you mock them and you insult them, then you're going to further annoy and alienate them. But here's New York Governor Kathy Hochul, who, and many of these people are her constituents. I'm sure they didn't vote for her, but they are her constituents nonetheless. And the point is that when the Democrats, if they ever learn this lesson to stop mocking and insulting and belittling people, it would serve them well. I'm not going to tell them. They don't listen to me, and I have no interest in helping them. But if they would be smart to just stop with the name calling. I mean, wasn't there a time we taught our kids this? Like, don't call people names. And then we told our kids when they were called names, well, be resilient. Remember, sticks and stones can break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Remember that? Yeah, I have three kids. I have a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 4-year-old. So I tell my kids all the time, be nice to people. Don't make fun of them. Don't mock them. Don't insult them. You're not going to win. You're not going to make friends that way. Even if other kids are making fun of somebody, don't join in. You'll do better in life if you don't join in on that. You would think Democrat adults would understand that lesson, would you not? You would think grown men and women would know the lesson that I'm trying to teach my children. Instead, they insult their own people, their own constituents. Here's Hochul, cut one.
Well, I'll tell you, it won't make a difference at all, Jake, and that is for Donald Trump to be the ringleader of and invite all his clowns to a place like the Bronx. New York will never, ever support Donald Trump for president. We know him better than anyone, and that means we understand what he's all about. It's just for himself. So this state will go solidly behind Joe Biden for
They're clowns. They're clowns, you see. They're clowns. It doesn't matter, Jake. First of all, she may be right. New York may go for Joe Biden, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't change the trajectory of the election for Donald Trump. But we see the point she's missing, the point that a lot of Democrats are missing, is that these black and Hispanic voters and white working class voters outside of New York watch that rally and see Trump talking to them and relating to them. So when they vote in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Georgia and North Carolina and Nevada and Arizona, and they vote in these places, they vote for Trump. See, the Democrats don't get that. They don't see that. They don't understand that. It's not about winning New York, you bozos. It's not about winning New Jersey. It's about sending a message. And by the way, a lot of people who are at the Wildwood rally, and I was there, although I was at a watch party at a bar called Mulligan's Shore Bar. We had a lot of fun there that day. But I saw it with my own eyes. There were a lot of Pennsylvania plates. There's a lot of Pennsylvania people vacation at the Jersey Shore. It's only an hour from Philly, hour and a half, depending on traffic, could be longer. But you know what I mean. You get my drift. All right, this is The Dana Show. It's great to be with you today. It's Rich Zeolian for Dana. You can follow along on Twitter, X. I still have a hard time calling it X, at Rich Zeoli, R-I-C-H-Z-E-O-L-I. And we'll be right back. Hunter Biden, by the way, pretrial hearing in the gun case. Lot to chat about today. Don't go away.
Our partners that help bring you free radio. It's our friends over at ReadyWise because, you know, things could go sideways. You don't know. May happen. Or, you know, maybe we could have a supply chain disruption, power outage, storm. There's no short of catastrophes that could take place. But the thing is that you want to be ready to have food to feed your family no matter what happens. And that's where ReadyWise comes in. You can use code DANA20 to save 20% on any regularly priced item. ReadyWise provides high quality, delicious food packed at their state-of-the-art plant right here in the U.S. of A. So from start to finish, you're supporting American jobs and you know directly where your food is coming from. And you've got peace of mind knowing that you have nutritious meals on hand that's going to support you to feed you and your family. They have an emergency one-month supply, two-bucket bundle, 36 pouches of premium survival food, 2,000-plus calories, 50-plus grams of protein per day. And it's no refrigeration required, just add water, 25-year shelf life. The time to prepare is now. Visit ReadyWise.com and use code DANA20 to save 20% off of any regularly priced item. That's ReadyWise.com, code DANA20.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
All right, it's the Dana Show. I got five things for you. Let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So more Americans now are using marijuana than drinking alcohol, which is insane to me as a wine lover, as a wine drinker. I can't figure that out. But yeah, new stats show more people are consuming marijuana since it's become legalized or decriminalized in most places than alcohol. But there's also a lot of warnings that the strains today are a lot stronger than they were back in the days of Cheech and Chong, and people are having lots of side effects. But it's all the rage. If you're in the marijuana biz, you're probably making some money. There's a new show coming out. It's on Hulu, and they have applications available. If you'd like to be a reality TV star, there's a little bit of a twist, though. The show is entitled Virgin Island and is a dating show for celibates. That's right. This new dating series titled Virgin Island, where stunningly attractive and confident singles who claim to have never had sexual relations would like to change that. And so these people also produce other shows like Love Island USA and Queer Eye and A Real Bug's Life. So Virgin Island will host a bunch of hot virgins at an island resort. It'll be 10 episodes. Good luck to you, and good luck lying and pretending like you're not as you fill out your application. Drinking water warning issued nationwide because of cyber attacks. A 5-year-old boy repeatedly calls 911 due to a hankering for pizza. And the cops came to his house. They gave him pizza. They took a picture with him as a lesson that, hey, you know, 911's for emergencies only. But it was Nassau County, New Jersey. And they said, I mean, Nassau County, New York. And they said, hey, kid, cops are your friends. It was a good teaching moment for the kid and for the police. The cops did the right thing there. And this is the headline of the day today. Pennsylvania clown charged with prostitution after undercover sting. A professional clown is facing charges after meeting an undercover officer during a prostitution sting. So just remember, clowns are creepy, and sometimes they're also, you know, hookers. All right, we got more to come on The Dana Show with me, Rich Zeoli. Hunter Biden in court. Don't go away.
So there's a company that I just started using called Ammo Squared, and Ammo Squared helps you stay stocked up on ammunition, like automatically. It's a truly automated system. You set it and you forget it. It's an ammo purchasing program, and you can pick whatever caliber you want. You can set your budget. You can select your shipping, and that's it. And the cool thing is that it builds up. Your ammunition builds up over time, and it's stored in this climate-controlled warehouse, and it sends it automatically when you want it, when you have it selected to send. And ammunition is a hard asset. I mean, it's something that's tangible. I think we all remember the uncertainty, like back in, 2019, 2020, when there were certain calibers that were kind of hard to find. And we ended up calling, we were calling some of our retail friends and saying, when do you get a shipment of this? Can we get some? Can we lay claim to some when it comes in? And in times of uncertainty and inflation, the value of all this stuff only goes up. So Ammo Squared is there to help smooth out the rough spots of ammunition availability. It's like an ammo 401k or something like that. You set it up. You have ammo for that rainy day when store shelves are empty and ammo's hard to find. So you can learn more and you can sign up today at ammosquared.com and ensure that you're prepared for whatever may come your way. That's ammosquared.com.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
African Americans are getting slaughtered. Hispanic Americans are getting slaughtered. And these millions and millions of people that are coming into our country, the biggest impact and the biggest negative impact is against our black population and our Hispanic population, who are losing their jobs, losing their housing, losing everything they can lose.
That's right. That was President Trump yesterday, future President Trump yesterday in the South Bronx. Welcome back to The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD in Philadelphia. You can follow along on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. So this idea of African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans impacted the most by illegal immigration. It's true. They're losing their jobs. They're seeing crime surge. In New York, they got to watch as illegal immigrants get prepaid debit cards. They have to watch as their community centers are closed so they can house illegal immigrants. They've got to watch as all these things are occurring, and meanwhile, they're struggling. Now, how do some of the Bronx voters and residents feel about things that are going on? Well, first of all, let's start with this. This is a Bronx voter who said, I've been a Democrat all my life. And Donald Trump, you know, he's got the right answers. Imagine that. Cut 12.
You said you've always voted Democrat, but this year it's going to change. Why is that?
Because I've seen the change
go for the worst. With the Bidenomics, with the Democratic Party, I've been Democrat all my life. And Donald Trump, he just has the right answers. He's speaking on illegal immigration, all the money pouring out of the country, people losing their jobs, the economy is failing. And at 60 years old, I realize now that we have to support Donald Trump and make things better.
Got to support Donald Trump and make things better. He's 60 years old. Hey, listen, better late than never. It's what I say. Welcome to the party, pal. Welcome to the party. But AOC is not happy about this. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's not from the Bronx. She's not Sandy from the block, as much as she likes to pretend she is. She's from the streets. She's not. She's from a very, very prestigious area outside of the Bronx in Westchester County. Very, very affluent area. But it's okay. You know, she likes to pretend like she's keeping it real in the streets. Well, what do they think? What do Bronx residents think about AOC? Does she even understand the struggle? Cut 13.
Where are you from?
The Bronx, actually.
I'm originally from the Bronx and from New York.
I'm from the Bronx.
Right here in the Bronx, New York. This is home, right here.
AOC says if you're not a Democrat, you don't belong here in the Bronx. Right. What do you say?
I disagree with that.
I don't think she should be here in the Bronx. I actually don't know any Democrats living in the Bronx.
Look, AOC, look at the tremendous support for Mr. Donald J. Trump.
You need to tell her then she needs to stay out the Bronx because look at all the people around. Everybody's here for Trump.
I am a Democrat. And I belong here.
And who are you voting for?
Donald J. Trump.
What has AOC done for the Bronx?
She's done nothing for the Bronx. Nothing. Nothing's changed. Nothing's gotten any better.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Let her come to the Bronx and let her come among us people that struggle. She doesn't even know what struggle is.
She doesn't even know what struggle is. Obviously, there was a montage of residents, but the last one at the end, I love that. She doesn't even know what the struggle is. Of course she doesn't. She has no idea. Sandy from the block has no idea what the struggles were like. And this is a bigger crowd than Democrats would like to see. Even CNN had to admit that. Even CNN. And they're not happy about it. Now, in their defense, nobody heard them say this because nobody's watching CNN. No, really, they are at their lowest numbers ever. I mean, even worse than when the Lester Cuomo was on the network. It's that bad. CNN's numbers are terrible. And they're just getting worse. I mean, I saw this story as a CNN sees lowest weekly primetime ratings among key demographics since 1991. Across all demos, the network recorded just 494,000 viewers. CNN. You remember the time, the day and age of Wolf Blitzer's beard when it was in its glory? Everybody tuned into CNN to watch OJ and the Bronco, the plane that went missing. Storms, but since then, CNN has never been able to gain a footing. And the problem is because they're MSNBC light. Let's face it. If you really hate Trump and you hate Republicans, you're going to tune into MSNBC because they at least go all in. CNN hates Trump too, but they still kind of pretend. And they do that pretend thing like, oh, we're up the middle. We call it up the middle. No, you don't. Stop. You can't be MSNBC light and expect to draw from MSNBC. And most of those numbers are probably because people are stuck at airports having to watch CNN. But anyway, this is what they said, cut 14.
What was the crowd like and what kind of response did he get?
Well, certainly a bigger crowd than I think Democrats would like to see, particularly given this is one of the bluest counties in the entire country. Now, one of the things that was interesting to me is that the Trump campaign said that they were going to micro-target to get people from the community to come to this rally. I wasn't sure what to expect. I've gone to a lot of these rallies across the country, and there are often people who travel hundreds of miles to see Donald Trump, and they're not necessarily part of the community. However, one of the things that I found was that there were a lot of people here that were actually from the Bronx.
Ooh, that's not good. People from the Bronx actually came to see Donald Trump? That doesn't make any sense. I thought the only people that liked Trump were in Alabama and Montana and the woods, shining their weapons and buying Cabela's fishing hats. I mean, I can't believe this. By the way, speaking of weapons, Hunter is in his pretrial hearing in the gun case. Nate Silver, who's a pollster, thinks that Joe Biden should consider dropping out of the race for president. That's how bad Joe Biden's poll numbers are. Nate Silver, he said, replacing Biden at the last minute is a risky idea. The question is whether by August, the Hail Mary could become the least worst option for Democrats. Let's go through the timing of this for just a moment. Let's think about this. Hunter Biden's in court today for his pretrial hearing in the gun case. Had his legal team not been a bunch of morons, he would not be in court today. He was given the ultimate deal. I've said this before, and I'll say it again, and I've said it on this show and on my show. Don't call it a sweetheart deal. It frustrates me when I hear people say that. It was not a sweetheart deal. It was a deal to cover up the financial crimes of the president of the United States of America, created by the Department of Justice, and they wrapped all of the financial and tax crimes into the gun charge. Why is that relevant? See, under federal law, if you enter a diversion agreement with the Department of Justice over a firearm application, the judge has no authority to reject it. When you do a plea agreement, for the most part, judges have a right to turn around and say, I don't agree. Prosecution and defense come to an agreement, and the judge goes, I don't care, I reject this. Either go work it out again, or plead guilty, or come to trial. I'm not accepting this. But in that case, the judge had no ability to reject the diversion agreement. But here's the little trick, and this is why I know the Department of Justice was trying to cover up for the president. By wrapping all the financial crimes into the gun diversion agreement, the judge couldn't also reject the plea agreement around the financial and tax crimes. Had they just come with a plea deal around those, she could have. So that judge was smart. She Jedi mind tricked the Hunter Biden legal team into rejecting the plea agreement. Because Hunter's an idiot, and idiots hire idiots. No, they do. I mean, they do. Morons hire morons. That's just how it works in life. Smart people hire smart people. So his rock star legal team let the deal of a lifetime, a deal that also would have protected the president of the United States, vanish before their very eyes, because the judge was smart enough to ask the question, could Hunter Biden face charges later on down the road? And the DOJ said, yeah, theoretically, I guess. And Hunter said, what? I thought this gave me immunity for everything for life. And they said, well, no, I mean, theoretically, you could be charged for, say, failing to file as a foreign agent, failing to register as a foreign agent. And he said, well, I'm not accepting this then. And they said, okay. So now he's in court on the gun case, facing prison time on that. But here's the best part. Once that deal was rejected, then the feds came in and charged him separately for the financial crimes. And that's what happened in California when the federales came in and charged him for tax evasion and all the other stuff. That trial has just been delayed until September. The Democrat National Convention is August. Let me ask you an honest question here. If you're a Democrat and you really are worried about Trump getting in there, you're really worried about Donald Trump Part 2, The Revenge, like Jaws 2, The Revenge, only better. Jaws 2 is not exactly the best of the Jaws movies, but it was better than Jaws 3 in 3D, and Jaws 4 was just an abomination. Mario Van Peebles, it was just awful. But nothing can top Jaws, obviously, but The Revenge, you know. So Donald Trump's going to get in there, and he's going to go after the deep state, and he even said at the rally yesterday, he said, I've learned a lot. I surrounded myself with people I shouldn't have, and I've learned a lot. We're going to go in there this time around. We've got a great team. Good. Don't listen to the Republican establishment hacks and the people that want to see the status quo. You're a Democrat. You're thinking to yourself, okay, Joe Biden can barely speak now, and it's May. As Nate Silver points out, if he stumbles through the debates, it could get even worse. He says, if the polls get worse for Biden, such as because he flubs the first debate, it could get worse from that. What's the threshold where random Democrats grab bad candidate or even Harris offers better odds than Biden? People should think about all this stuff. And he's saying that right now, this is not where you want to be. Like Barack Obama at this point in his reelection was ahead in all the polls. This is just a very, very bad place to be. So think about it. So Biden can barely speak. He's yelling at reporters. He can't read on the teleprompter anymore. The debate could be a disaster for him. And then the trial starts with his idiot crackhead son, Hunter Biden, on financial crimes. Right as Americans get ready to come back from vacation after Labor Day, when the political season really begins, when you start really focusing in on politics. Now, suddenly, there's a trial about tax evasion and everything else. Guys like Hunter Biden, they don't like to go to jail. They don't like it, so they sing like a canary. What happens if a gigantic October surprise comes out right before the election, implicating the president, Joe Biden, in his son's lucrative business dealings, which we all know he's implicated in? Now you got a guy who can't speak. His poll numbers are down. He did terrible at the debates, even though they tried to prop him up with vitamin B12 and B pollen and Red Bull and probably cocaine and Adderall and kind of a whole transfusion thing. And he still did a terrible job in the debates. And now you got this big October surprise out there. You've lost Hispanic support. You're bleeding black support. Are Democrats really going to take that chance? Or are they going to swap this guy out? I mean, what do you think? What do you think happens here? Honestly, and I know that everybody thinks it's too late. It's not too late. The convention's in August. They have time. That's their deadline, though. They could do a switcheroo at the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. And then as America comes back from vacation, summer break, and everybody gets back to school and back to work and starts focusing in on this stuff, now you meet the new Democrat candidate for president of the United States. Now, there's several barriers to this happening, obviously. But when you got guys like Nate Silver coming out and saying this is a real Democrats, they need to start thinking about this. These poll numbers, you may not be able to save this. And I don't think you can. I'll give you more details on that in just a moment. It's the Dana Show. It's me, Rich, in for Dana. We're coming right back.
Our partners over at Kel-Tec, American-made Florida origin. Florida born and bred. Well, yeah, I mean, they're made in America and based in Florida. And I love the story behind Kel-Tec. It's like one of the most all-American stories ever. You have a guy who immigrates to the United States. He's born in Sweden, George Kellgren, and establishes Kel-Tec in 1991. And has been making some really innovative stuff ever since. You've seen a lot of it in different movies and on my wall here in the studio. But a very, very innovative designer and always quality. And their Sub 2K Gen 3, this is just one example. This is the one that's been shipping. That's an upgraded version I have the Gen 2. The Gen 3, this is a 9mm carbine that you can just straight up fold in half. Just twist, fold right in half. But you don't have to take your optics off anymore. No detaching at the optics to do that. It folds with the optics all attached. You don't have to mess with it. And they've also lightened the action for easy racking. You have an ambidextrous bolt hold open, redesigned trigger as well for a lightened 5-pound pull. All quality made right here in America, in Florida. America needs more all-American stories like Kel-Tec and more companies like Kel-Tec. See, just not just the Gen 3, but the KSG, everything that they have to offer at KelTecWeapons.com, and be sure to follow them on social media. Sign up for that Kel-Tec Insider so you can get heads up on all their new products. K-E-L-T-E-C, weapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the fallout and reaction of this Bronx rally has everything to do with why Democrats are panicking today. And guys like Nate Silver are turning around and saying, Biden really, the Democrats need to think about him dropping out of this race. And I was looking at his analysis of this. And again, he's a numbers guy. He's a data guy. Biden's down in every single swing state poll. The majority of them. He's down in all the states of the swing states that you need to win. The majority of polls, he's down in all of the majority of the polls. So there's like one or two that are outliers that show him up or very, very close. But those are outliers. And now it's May. And his point is that if we get closer to Election Day and it gets even worse for Biden, the Democrats don't have any options at this point. They're running out of options. So they may need to make a switch. And you're running out of time if you're going to make a switch. Because if you don't make the switch by August, it's too late. So you got to, you have, if you're going to change out, if you're going to change candidates, you got to do it by August. You got to do it at the convention. Otherwise, it's just too late. So now the question becomes, if you're Joe Biden and you're down, how do you regain that gap? How do you make up that gap? Well, one of the ways you could do it is you could have more debates, but Biden only challenged Trump to two debates. The Presidential Commission wanted three debates. Trump actually challenged Biden, but you know what I mean. Biden is going to debate Trump twice. Nate Silver's point is, if you're down in the polls, you want as many opportunities as you possibly can to try to make up that ground. But think about it. Biden says no to the Super Bowl interview. He said he only wants to do two debates, not three. He's not doing sit-down interviews anymore because he can't. Because mentally speaking, the guy can't. He can't do it. I'll play some audio in the next hour that proves this, but it's a problem for them. And then you still have, hanging over their heads, you have Hunter Biden. But, you know, I still am convinced, there's a reason why they rushed back in October of 2020 to tell you that Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. And it wasn't because they were worried about Hunter Biden's disgusting nudie pics. It wasn't because they were worried about that. It was because it implicated Joe, the big guy. And the whole campaign was about kind old man in the basement, keeping America safe from mean tweets and COVID. And it couldn't be that this guy has actually been on the take using his political power and influence to enrich himself and his family. But now all that's going to come out in the fall when Hunter Biden's on trial. This is a big risk the Democrats are taking, keeping this guy as their candidate. It's a gigantic risk. And I, for one, don't think they're going to do it. I'd be shocked if Biden remains the candidate. What about you? All right, we got a big hour number two coming up on The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zioli, in for Dana. More reaction from the South Bronx, Hunter Biden in court. And you know what, too? I got to tell you, it's not surprising. The green left people are terrified of Trump getting back in there. Don't go away.
Hi, I'm Erica, an English major at Hillsdale College. Here's Hillsdale President Dr. Larry Arnn with a Constitution Minute.
James Madison writes in Federalist 51 that men are not angels. Their passions and self-interest often get the better of their reason and sense of justice. So we need government in order to protect our rights against those who would take them away. But for the same reason, Madison writes, government must be limited, because people in government have passions and interests too. Many Americans today forget this. Supposing that we can do away with constitutional limits on government, supposing that the unelected bureaucrats being put in charge of our health care, for example, will rule as if they are angels. If Madison was correct about human nature, this is foolish and dangerous.
To learn more and get a free pocket constitution, visit constitutionminute.com.
What was my question?
Sir, your question was Haiti. Can the United States and Kenya or the nations collectively break the backs of this coordinated militia that has the grips of the nation?
Well, what was my question? What? Welcome back to The Dana Show. It's great to be with you on this Friday before our long Memorial Day weekend. It's Rich Zioli from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD in Philadelphia, where I do the afternoon drive show from 3 to 7 p.m. every day, except today, because after this show, kids are off from school. We're going to go have a little family day as we begin the long weekend. Let's never forget, of course, Monday, Memorial Day. We remember those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for our country. And one of my favorite memes that I've ever seen out there is a side-by-side picture of your day at the beach, and it's a picture of people, you know, just enjoying their day at the beach, brought to you by their day at the beach, and it's a picture of our boys storming the beaches of Normandy on June 6th. So just keep in mind, of course, on Monday as we, and you should, barbecue, go to the beach, the pool, have friends over, family, enjoy the day, enjoy the freedom, but don't forget to remember and honor those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for that freedom that we will enjoy this Memorial Day. My favorite thing just happened a moment ago. The special counsel who's going after Hunter Biden, they are going to use the laptop as a trial exhibit. And this is the statement they put out. The defendant's laptop is real. It will be produced as a trial exhibit, and it contains significant evidence of the defendant's guilt. Boom. Wait a second. That's weird, though, because I thought that laptop was Russian disinformation. That's what they told me. They told me that. They told you this, too. Let's see if the tweet's still up. I always like to, I bookmark this. Yes. Jen Psaki, 10:45 p.m., October 19th, 2020. Hunter Biden's story is Russian disinfo, dozens of former intel officials say. Jen Psaki, who now is a journalist. That was the best the other day. She was at a thing and she described herself as a journalist, and the crowd started laughing. Like you're a journalist? Just as unbiased as George Stephanopoulos is. So the Hunter Biden laptop that you were told at one point was Russian disinformation, and if you try to talk about it, it was censored. It was censored by all the big tech, corporate media. Everybody censored it. The New York Post story couldn't share it. And for a year or so, they kept telling you it was Russian disinformation. That laptop is now going to be used as evidence because it contains significant evidence of the defendant's guilt. I love that. The irony of this is just fantastic. The DOJ is going to use the Hunter Biden laptop as evidence in the trial. Now, this is just the gun case. This one's not as bad for Joe Biden. It's the financial case in September. That's the one that I think has the tendency, the potential to bring down the big guy. Because you know and I know, everybody knows that Joe Biden's implicated in all this. That's why they wanted the financial crimes to all go away, and they tried to roll it into the gun diversion agreement. This way, it would all go away, and the judge couldn't reject it. The judge outsmarted them, and that's why we're here today. So, getting back to this point about Joe Biden and his candidacy, you're going to have the Democrat National Convention in August in Chicago. You're going to have protests there. You're going to have all these crazy college kids protesting, all these crazy anti-Israel people protesting. You're going to have a president who can barely speak and barely read the teleprompter get up on stage and accept his party's nomination. He's down in the polls. He's at 38% approval rating. He's losing in every single swing state. There's only two debates with a chance to turn it around for him. And you know as well as I do, he's not going to perform well in either of the debates. And then his son goes on trial for financial crimes, in which case he could be implicated in those crimes heading into the general election and the ultimate October surprise. Are the Democrats really, really going to keep Joe Biden on the ballot? I mean, come on. Come on. Come on. And I know that the guy, look, he's a stubborn old guy. He's a stubborn old man. He's a stubborn Irish guy, as he always says. And it's not that easy to get rid of somebody with an ego like his. He's got a massive ego. And how do you do it? How do you get Joe Biden out of the race? Because that's the question. Well, there's two things that need to happen. The first is you have to get rid of Kamala Harris, because the Kamala Harris problem has always been Joe Biden's Achilles heel. Kamala Harris is less popular than Joe Biden is, if you can believe that. She gets crushed by Donald Trump, in my opinion. Crushed. Her record alone as the attorney general in California prosecuting black people for drug crimes will further hurt the chances of the Democrats with the African-American vote in the fall. So she's a terrible candidate. So you have to deal with her first, because if Biden steps aside and you don't nominate Kamala Harris, well, then woke's going to be very upset. And at the convention, you can't risk the fact that she's able to rally and get the nomination. So all this has to be controlled. The Democrats want to see Justice Sonia Sotomayor off the Supreme Court because they're really worried Trump's going to win and replace her. The other day, I think it was David Plouffe, one of those guys from the Obama administration. They were all talking on Pod Save America, and they were saying, you know, Trump could appoint 4 or 5 justices if he gets a second term. 4 or 5 justices if he gets back in the White House. They're terrified of that. So they want Sonia Sotomayor to go now so that they can replace her with somebody who's a lefty. Well, there's your opportunity. You convince her to go. You put Kamala Harris on the Supreme Court, and then now you can replace Joe Biden without having to worry about Kamala Harris, and you've solved that problem. The second thing you have to do is convince the crotchety old man that he can win. You have to, his ego is massive. Joe Biden has a massive ego. You got to convince him, well, he could win. The question, though, Mr. President, is, do you really want to be implicated in all of your son's crimes? Do you want your son to have to go through this? Or you could pardon him and save him a trial, putting your son first and then you as a dad first over your political future, and then say you're not going to run for re-election. Because you just can't risk your son using again. And you have the power to do it. But you also know that it's not politically the smart thing to do, but you don't care. You have to save your son. And then then your legacy will be preserved and we can go on about what a great dad you are. Blah, 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 blah. So then he pardons Hunter. He gets out of the race. The trial of Hunter Biden does not happen. Joe Biden's not implicated. It's over. The Biden crime family, they get to enjoy their money and nobody can touch them. Statute of limitations have expired. Hunter Biden's been pardoned. It's over. It all goes away. And then they swap him out. That's how this could play out. And it's not easy. It's not easy to get rid of a guy with Biden's massive megalomaniac ego. And he thinks the polls are wrong. And he's got people around him who I guess are telling him the polls are wrong. And so they're living in this fantasy world. Nate Silver's point is the polls are not wrong. These polls are not wrong. And whenever somebody's winning in the polls, they say the polls are right. When somebody's losing in the polls, they say the polls are wrong. Carville said the same thing. James Carville said the same thing. He said the polls are not wrong. And we got to stop pretending like they're wrong. Like, stop. He's losing. He's losing. And the problem is, I mean, again, he can't speak. He calls on a reporter from a pre-selected list at his press conference. This is with the president of Kenya. And then tells the reporter he can only ask one question. All right? This is cut five. Cut five, Steve.
First question. Michael Wilner, McClatchy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Two questions, if I may, on...
No, one.
So he's got his pre-selected list. My first question, measure from McClatchy. Got the list there, and then, one. You get one, all right? You're lucky I'm even here. And he's got the question. He probably has the answer all right there for him. And anyway, then Biden asked the ultimate question, of course, which Dwight asked the next question, cut four.
Okay, next. Do I ask the next question as well?
Let me ask.
Do I ask the next question? You're the president. The press asked the question. He slurred, had to read from his note cards. Again, I'm telling you this as you think about Biden debating. On a debate stage where he doesn't have the ability to just stay on note cards and script the entire time. Where Trump, who does not come across as a cadaver, and again, that's what James Carville said to the ladies on The View, or Bill Maher said to the ladies on The View. He said, Joe Biden comes across as a cadaver. So Trump's going to beat him up on that stage, and Joe Biden's going to have to respond, and it's going to have to be spontaneous, and good luck with that when he can barely get through his note cards, cut three.
And by the way, you asked about, you implied that we weren't doing anything anywhere else. Well, we're kind of occupied around the world, but we're also engaged in Congo, in the neighborhood. And, we can continue to help alleviate human suffering there. The United States is the largest humanitarian donor, providing $375 million in humanitarian funding just this year, including support for more than 6 million displaced people from the DRC.
Oh, wow. Oof. Oof. And that's him reading. That's him reading. Imagine when he doesn't have to read. Biden tells the Kenyan president that the African continent will soon have 1 billion people. By the way, it already has 1 billion people. But I digress. Cut six.
And, the African continent will have 1 billion people not too soon. The idea we're going to ignore it makes no sense at all.
Ignore it? What do you want to do? Start... population control, sterilization, killing people. What do you want to do? What's your solution? Considering they're already at 1 billion people. And then I don't know what this means. If you can translate this for me, that'd be great. Cut seven.
Jill and I are honored to have you here and representing, including many members of the African diaspora. One just left, Barack. He's been very gracious. He met the president this morning. He was just here a little while ago.
Huh? What? So, yeah, they got a problem. In the meantime, Trump is picking up and doing really, really well with key groups the Democrat Party needs. More on that in just a moment. It's the Dana Show. It's me, Rich, in for Dana. Great to have you with us. We got a big show still to come. Don't go away.
Black Rifle Coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Everything else is just garbage. And it's actual like coffee aficionados, people who know what they're doing. They don't just find a niche market and go, I want to make some coffee. No, they actually make really good coffee. They're coffee nerds. And I don't say that as like a mean thing. I mean, it's just true. They have the best beans. They have the best roast. They roast the beans 5 days a week. Their facilities in Utah and Tennessee. This is veteran-owned, veteran-run. They hire veterans and active duty. And they support our first responders. And they help veterans fight health issues. They help them with PTSD. They help them with everything. And they serve premium coffee to people who love America. Now, every bag, like I said, roasted right here in the U.S. of A. And you got a variety of choices. You can get your ground beans. You can get your whole beans. You can get your K-cups. You're ready to drink. But you're also going to find apparel, the kettles, the mugs, the grinders, everything you need for your perfect cup of coffee. Try for yourself today. You can save 20% using code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com. But you're only going to get that 20% off with code Dana at blackriflecoffee.com.
Craving a daily dose of intellectual adrenaline? Look no further than the Dana Show podcast, where curiosity meets courage by following on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I got to tell you what Byron Donald said about the Bronx last night. You probably heard it in the rally, but we'll get to that here on the Dana Show. First, I got five things for you. Let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
1,400 packages of meth weighing almost 6 tons and worth $18 million were found in a squash shipment. That's right, squash, as in like the horrible vegetable. Anyway, he crossed the border and CBP officials found and they discovered all this, about 1,400 packages of methamphetamine concealed within the shipment of squash, with the total weight of the narcotics being about 11,500 pounds, a street value of about $18,500,000. There you go. Look at that, huh? You thought you were just getting a horrible vegetable. A mom was fined $88,000 after her kids collected 72 clams from a California beach thinking they were seashells. This is California. $80,000 worth of fines because their kids were out there doing what kids always do in the summer when they're on a beach and collect seashells. The mom said it made me really sad and depressed and it kind of ruined our trip. She said the whole experience taught her children and her valuable lessons about wildlife regulations. She received a fine in the mail ordering her to pay $88,993 before a San Luis Obispo judge. Now, I got to tell you, kids should not have to worry about wildlife regulations when they're on vacation, okay? They should just be able to be kids. The judge knocked the fine down to $500. Good for the judge. Hiker mauled by grizzly in Grand Teton National Park played dead. And the bear won't be pursued. That's what you always do. If you know, there's always that question of would you rather be stuck in the woods? This went viral with a man or a bear. And mostly they're asking women this question. For me, I'd rather be stuck in the woods with a bear because I can kill a bear with my bear. I've done it before. But if you ever have to fight one, play dead. That's typically what they tell you. And good luck. And remember, if you're with two people, you don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun your friend. Anger does a lot more damage to your body than you realize. This is a study that came out. Anger is really bad. And one thing that it can do is it can raise the risk of heart attacks because it impairs the functioning of blood cells. So don't get angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. Don't let it happen to you. Now, you know who's not angry? Housekeepers in Palm Beach. They're making $150,000 a year due to massive demand from the wealthy. Housekeepers, $1.50 a year. Pretty good. I'll tell you, if this radio thing doesn't work out, and it's probably not going to work out, I'm just saying. And lastly, I mentioned this earlier, but it's worth repeating. CNN sees their lowest weekly primetime ratings among key demographic since 1991. Amazing. All right, it's the Dana Show. More to come. Don't go away.
Gold Co. Precious Metals. Because you want to make sure you're protecting what you have. You need a hedge against inflation, and that's what gold and silver can help you with. And Gold Co. is where you go to get it done. Diversify, protect your savings with precious metals. They have a free 2024 wealth protection kit. You can learn how to possibly get $10,000 in bonus silver as a listener of this program while supplies last. Thousands of five-star reviews. They've got a perfect rating from the Better Business Bureau. And they want to make sure you understand all the facts about how to protect yourself with inflation, national debt, and everything. thing, because precious metals ownership is a very important part of your overall retirement and savings strategy. No pressure, completely transparent, and they want to make sure that you understand the whole economy of how gold IRAs work. Get started today at DanaLikesGold.com. Get your free gold kit from Gold Co. and learn how to get $10,000 in bonus silver and your complimentary wealth protection kit at DanaLikesGold.com.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I mentioned to you earlier, my favorite story, the feds are going to use the Hunter Biden laptop in his gun trial, which I just love. Welcome back to the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for my friend Dana. Hope you have a great weekend ahead. Federal prosecutors plan to deploy thousands of pages of electronic records from Hunter Biden's laptop from hell, including a message demanding more chore boy to smoke crack cocaine. That's right. According to a New York Post story, President Biden's 54-year-old son goes on trial June 3rd in Delaware federal court, accusing him of illegally owning a gun while addicted to drugs. And prosecutors in special counsel David Weiss's office has said they plan to show damning evidence taken from the laptop, a hard drive, and an iCloud account linked to his iPad and his iPhone. In all, they have more than 18,000 pages of Biden's electronic records, which they want to summarize in a chart for jurors. Messages between the defendant and witness three, beginning in row 88, because the defendant began using his ex-wife's phone in October 2018, and her old phone was not synced to his iCloud account. Witness three will testify to the authenticity of these messages at trial. Messages in row 85, 86, a message where the defendant says, quote, "I need more chore boy, I need more chore boy," which is used consistently in the message with how the defendant described chore boy in his book. Chore boy is, I guess, crack cocaine. Rows 87 and 135 through 137, messages where the defendant says he is in Delaware, which is consistent with his ATM withdrawal activity, location information on photographs on his phone, and his admissions in his book. Row 214, a photograph of the defendant with a crack pipe in his hand. Well, I mean, who amongst us doesn't have one of those lying around him, all right? Huh? 216 to 292, videos and photographs of the defendant with a crack pipe and drug messages from December to March 2019, consistent with the defendant's characterization of his activity in his book. One message says, "I need more chore boy," according to court papers filed by prosecutors on Wednesday. Isn't it amazing all this could have gone away? Isn't that amazing? I mean, it's just, it really is delicious to think about. The last summer, this was all going to go away. It was perfectly wrapped up in a gun diversion agreement, along with the financial crimes. Don't forget something. This gun case doesn't affect Joe Biden, but the same evidence that they have probably implicates Joe Biden and Hunter Biden's business dealings. See, that's the October surprise. Like I just said to Ed on Twitter, Ed Farmer, and you can tweet along the show as well, at Rich Zeoli, R-I-C-H-Z-E-O-L-I. He said, "I don't think voters are going to be swayed by the Hunter Biden trial in the fall." It's not about swaying voters. It's about we don't know what we don't know. But Biden knows, or he forgot, but he knew at one point. And now the prosecutors know. So you see, if you want to get the guy out of the race, and they've gone through the laptop, which we were all told was Russian disinformation. And why were we told that? Do you think it was really honestly, do you honestly believe it was because they were so worried that if these disgusting pictures of Hunter Biden came out and pictures of him with a crack pipe, that Joe Biden would lose? No, no, no. Come on. That's the stuff candidates hope happen. Well, think about it. He gets to stand up there as a father and say, "Yeah, you know, my son struggled like millions of Americans struggle. And you as a parent may have a child with an addiction. It's the worst. And when I'm president, I'm going to fight to make sure that your family gets the help that you need to be able to battle addiction and that we can save people's lives." Oh, it'd be a great political moment. No, you don't have 50 former national security deep state hacks all rushed together to say the laptop is Russian disinformation when they know it's not. And they knew it wasn't because the FBI had it in its possession since 2019. And it was Mike Morrell at the CIA and those people that were the ones that orchestrated this whole idea to say it was Russian disinformation. You don't say it because Hunter Biden's got a crack pipe. You don't send everybody into a tailspin because of that. You seize that. That's a political opportunity right there. Oh, my son, I'll tell you, he went through hell, but he turned his life around. And I'm glad I was able to help him as a dad. You know, and if people want to judge me because of my son's addiction, well, then you're going to have to judge millions and millions of Americans whose children battle addiction. And on their behalf, I will fight for that. I'm going to be what a political gift. You kidding me? In fact, if I were the candidate and I found out that they said the laptop was Russian disinformation because they were worried about my son's drug addiction and pictures of him with hookers coming out, I'd be like, why would you deprive me of this opportunity to stand before America and say, my son turned his life around, I can help you with your children, save them from the throes of addiction. And I could do a whole big event with parents whose sons and daughters have died from drug addiction or battle drug addiction. And I pledge to provide more money, more resources, more training. This will be my signature achievement if I'm elected president. I would fire those people. Are you kidding me? I would fire them for depriving me of that political gift. And you know that Joe Biden would have no problem using his son for political purposes. He does it all the time. How many times is he confused where Bo died or openly lied to people and said Bo died in war? I mean, Bo Biden has died in more places than Waldo's ever been. He loves to use his family for political purposes. Even when he's giving marriage advice, like you should definitely marry a woman who's got five sisters because, you know, yeah, spices things up a little bit, if you know what I mean. Oh, he loves to use his family for political purposes. No, stop it. They didn't cover up the Hunter Biden laptop and tell you it was Russian disinformation and have the New York Post censored and have big tech work with the corporate media and the FBI because they were worried about these pictures. It was the financial stuff against the big guy. And they couldn't risk Joe Biden losing. They had to get rid of Trump. The deep state did its thing and they all worked together to convince everybody, although they didn't convince us, but you know what I mean, to convince corporate media and big tech something was coming. Remember what the Twitter files show, Matt Taibbi and the other guys who put this out there, Schellenberger. The Twitter files show that the FBI went to Mark Zuckerberg and to Jack Dorsey, who owned Twitter at the time, and said, we know that something big is coming. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. We just don't know what it is, but they knew what it was. See, they were, if you remember, they were listening to Rudy Giuliani's phone calls back then in another case where they never charged Giuliani, but they were listening to him and spying on him. So he was talking to Miranda Devine about the laptop. So they knew the New York Post was going to write the story about the Hunter Biden laptop. And the very same time that they're doing that, they're telling big tech, you know, something's coming. Those Ruskies are at it again. So get ready, and we'd really appreciate your help in censoring if the Russians try to infiltrate our election again, even though they didn't the last time. Even though there was no Russia collusion last time, this time around, if it happens, we need you to do the right thing and censor it. And Big Tech was more than happy to oblige, of course. Corporate media was more than happy to oblige. They had to do whatever they could to stop Trump. The deep state was terrified of him getting a second term. And it was mid-October when all this came out. But they can't stop it now. Now what's on that laptop is now being used as evidence against Hunter Biden. And here's what I think. Here's what I think. I think that this is how they get Joe Biden out of the race. If you're going to get Joe Biden out of the race, you go to him with evidence from that laptop. And you say, Mr. President, all this is going to come out in the trial in September. The fact that you're the big guy, the fact that you had these meetings and Hunter Biden is using your name and all this stuff, this is all going to come out. And Mr. President, we have to be really, really cognizant of the fact that this could destroy your reelection chances. This comes out in September, October, or we have to worry about Hunter flipping. You know, I think Hunter Biden sent a very veiled threat when he said, my father was never financially involved in my business. I think that was a very veiled threat. Like, I'm more than happy to squeal if I got to squeal. So you go to Biden, you sit him down, you show him the evidence. They have it all now. They know what's there. I actually think this is all worked out already. I think this is a game. We're watching a game being played here before our very eyes. If you're going to switch out Biden, you wait to the last minute. You wait till the convention. You do it now, and whoever that person is gets subjected to the scrutiny of being a candidate. Whereas you do it in August, and now you've got September, October to define that person. And even if it's, say, Gavin Newsom. Well, yeah, Gavin Newsom's got a terrible record in California to go after, but it's not Biden's record. So he'll stand up there with his charming good looks and his big coif of hair with a carbon footprint of 28,000 metric tons of fossil fuels, because it's a lot of oil to keep that hair down. There's a lot of pomade on that baby, you know what I'm saying? And he'll stand up there and he'll go, yeah, but it's not my record. And, you know, Trump will go after him for California. But you're no longer going after Biden. And there's other scenarios, of course, of other candidates they could swap in there. I'm not going to name names. Some of those people have said they have no interest whatsoever in running. But then again, you got to wonder if it meant saving their country, would they do it? Because they love their country so much? Anyway, you wait to the last possible minute. So right now in this gun case, the prosecutors want to include messages between Hunter and witness number 3, previously identified by the Post as his sister-in-law turned lover, Haley Biden. Well, again, I mean, to Joe Biden's point, if you're going to get married, make sure she's got a lot of sisters. Am I right? You know, if it doesn't work out with one, you got 4 others there. I'm just saying. So, you know, in this case, his sister-in-law, you know, works out, I guess, for everybody. Anyway, they were sent to and from the phone of Hunter's ex-wife, Kathleen Buell, and thus not synced to his iCloud account. Don't forget, there's also the woman, the professional dancer that Hunter Biden knocked up. And now they have this little girl who, she's an innocent victim in all this, but the Biden family completely ignores her and pretends like she doesn't exist, which is such a sin. The first son, who was in a Delaware federal courthouse today for his pretrial conference one day after attending a White House state dinner, which is another thing that Democrats can't understand. They're all saying, like, why do you keep bringing Hunter around the White House? And how is it that every time he leaves, we find cocaine? And I've said this before, too. You know, that poor dog commander who was biting all the Secret Service agents, that dog was coked out of his mind. You heard of cocaine bear? Well, cocaine White House dogs. That's what happened here. When Commander's walking around in the South Lawn, he's sniffing it, cocaine's, you know, I mean, and then he starts biting people. It's not his fault. Cocaine bear went crazy. Cocaine White House dog also went crazy. I'm just, you know, saying that. So they have all the evidence on him now. The laptop that we were told didn't exist, that was Russian disinformation. And when he stood on stage with Donald Trump and said 50 national security experts have all came out and said that that laptop is Russian disinformation, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's now being used as evidence against Hunter Biden. And you know, as well as I do, that there's stuff on there that implicates Joe. And if there wasn't, we would not have gone through this whole thing back in October of 2020 of telling everybody the laptop was Russian disinformation. They knew it was on it. They knew it implicated Joe, and they didn't care because they had to get Trump out of the White House. So they went along with covering up for the former vice president, hiding his crimes from the American people just to get Trump out. That's what our deep state did. That's what our FBI, our CIA, our national intelligence people, that's what they did. But they can't do it now because we know it's on the laptop now. And all that stuff is going to come out. And the way that I know, the proof that I have that Joe Biden is implicated is because of the reason why they went to such great lengths to tell you it was Russian disinformation. They wouldn't do that over Hunter Biden nudie pics. It's the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. We're coming right back.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
All right, it's the Dana Show. We got a lot to chat about in the next hour, including where things go with the Trump case after Memorial Day. But it's time to talk about this guy. Let's do it.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Yeah, so this Florida man is actually a priest, and he bit a churchgoer while trying to receive Holy Communion. It's a very, very odd story, but police are investigating an incident that unfolded at a Catholic church on Sunday where a priest allegedly bit a churchgoer because she was trying to receive the Holy Communion in an improper way. It took place at St. Thomas Aquinas Church, and they filed an affidavit of prosecution summary against the priest, which will be forwarded to the state attorney's office for review. The priest refused to give her the communion and gave her a blessing instead, saying she didn't follow the proper steps necessary to receive Holy Communion. And then I guess something happened and she tried to take it, and that led to the priest biting her, I guess. But the woman shoved the priest and then grabbed the bowl that contained the communion wafers and then tried to eat them. And then the priest considered it to be sacrilegious, so he bit her. He said, I recognize that I bit her. I'm not denying that. And they have the video of it. And then, you know, it was sort of a disaster. Anyway, you don't see that every day. You know, biting priests. You just don't see that every day. A Florida man chugs a beer in front of the cops after throwing bottles off the balcony, according to deputies. This was in Fort Myers Beach. A Florida man was arrested after staff at the Margaritaville Resort in Fort Myers Beach told deputies he was throwing beer bottles off a fourth floor balcony over the weekend. According to an arrest report from the Lee County Sheriff's Office, 23-year-old Connor Thurman, whose room is located just above the hotel's valet parking area, threw a beer bottle from his balcony around 1:30 a.m. When the officials tried to knock on his door, a security guard had to yell to him. He was sitting on his balcony. And then he chugged a beer in front of the cops because, I mean, what are you going to do? Let the beer go to waste? Of course not. So you got to chug it. I mean, what are you going to, I mean, that's, I mean, duh. And finally, this Florida man steals a vehicle and then calls the owner before getting busted. Yeah, this genius, he actually called her to report the theft. He stole the car and let the woman know that he stole it. Which I think is very considerate. If you're going to steal a car, could you at least be kind and considerate enough to just, you know, let the owner know? All right. Third hour of the Dana Show straight ahead with me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. What's next for Donald Trump in court? Straight ahead. And then the question is, does Joe Biden have any super fans? Well, actually, The Daily Show found a Biden super fan, believe it or not. Welcome back to The Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana. Great to be with you today on this Friday pre-Memorial Day weekend as we begin the busy travel weekend. They say it's going to be very busy. And, of course, gas prices start to go up, and that's why Biden just tapped the Strategic Petroleum Reserve again to try to lower gas prices in another election year gimmick. But I'll tell you, the Bronx rally that Trump had raised a lot of alarms for Democrats. And I think this is what led to Nate Silver coming out and saying Democrats really need to think about getting rid of this guy. They really got to think about swapping Biden out for somebody. He's not doing well. I mean, he's not doing well polling-wise. It's bad. It's really bad. Here's CNN, their data guy, Harry Enten, raising the alarm on why Trump's Bronx rally could spell serious trouble for Joe Biden. Cut 23.
Guys, if we could just put this newspaper up on the screen. Look, this is Donald Trump's hometown paper, the New York Post. He got the headline that he wanted out of this, and this is something that Trump is so important to him. But it's more than that, Kate. Yeah. Look at the Cortona Park area, right? The Cortona Park precinct where that rally was held yesterday. It's a majority Hispanic precinct. And I want you to take a look, essentially, at the election results over the last few cycles. And what you would see there is essentially see that, look, this is a very Democratic precinct, right? But look at the margin trend line here. You see Obama 94, Obama 96, Clinton 92. Biden won it, but by only 69 points.
There's only 69 points?
Why is that important? Because look at that. That's 23 percentage points less than Hillary Clinton won it by. This is a sign of the Hispanic movement that we saw last cycle, right? Where we saw, although Hispanics still favored the Democratic candidate in Joe Biden, they were less likely to favor him than they did Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama both times. And it's not just there that happened. We saw it in Hispanic precincts and counties across the country, from Southeast Florida, Southern Texas, even in the Los Angeles area.
Not good. Not good. Not so good. And of course, a big part of this is the economy, as you just heard Dana talking about in the opening. It's a big part in the economy. Higher food prices. And I couldn't believe when the data came out on fast food, how much things have gone up. Like a cheeseburger from McDonald's has gone up 200% since 2019. Chicken nuggets. Those things really impact the middle class. They really do. And they also impact people on the lower part of the economic ladder as well. Food prices affect everybody, and you can't spin your way out of that. You know, in politics, you can spin a lot of things. You can't spin how people feel when they're at the grocery checkout line and they're going, are you freaking kidding me? Are you kidding me? When they go through the McDonald's drive-thru or the Chick-fil-A drive-thru or Taco Bell, and they get to the drive-thru and the guy says, you know, it's $67. Like, what? They used to be taking like a nice night out to dinner. Now it's just McDonald's for the family. Higher food prices are going to be also burning a hole in your wallet this Memorial Day weekend. You'll be spending more this Memorial Day weekend on just about everything. Cut 18.
Planning on hosting a barbecue this Memorial Day weekend, higher food prices may burn a hole in your wallet. The prices on barbecue basics are higher this year than last year. According to the latest data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the national average of a pound of uncooked ground beef is $5.56. That's about 31 cents higher than last year when prices were at $5.25. Now, on average, a beef steak will cost you about $10.75 a pound compared to around $9.96 last year.
But hey, listen, don't worry about it, because the White House is expanding their Environmental Justice Council. So that'll solve all the problems. The Biden administration has supplemented its prestigious group of advisors for its green agenda. So don't sweat it. Don't worry about it. And in a sign that the green agenda is not popular, in Pennsylvania, the must-win state of Pennsylvania, where I broadcast from on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT every afternoon from 3 to 7 p.m., Senator Bob Casey is up for re-election. Now, Casey is a guy you never hear from. You've probably never heard his name. His father was a great guy. He was a great governor. There's a famous case, Casey v. Planned Parenthood. He was one of probably the last pro-life Democrat to ever be governor of a state. And he sued because, I mean, he tried to stop funding Planned Parenthood, and they sued, and it was a major Supreme Court case, almost overturned Roe v. Wade. But the lesser Casey, as Bob Casey Jr. is known, he disappears and he only shows his face every 6 years. And that's when you know he sees his shadow and he's got an election. Otherwise, he's gone. The guy running against him, Dave McCormick, has a really strong chance of winning. And with Trump on the ballot and McCormick, I mean, it's Pennsylvania is, I think it goes red. I really do. I really believe that. I'm not just saying that. There was a story in the Wall Street Journal a while ago, and it had all these guys who work in the natural gas sector. And one of the guys in the article admitted that he voted for Biden because he didn't like Trump's tweets. And now he realizes what a mistake he made. And he said, I will never vote Democrat again. They are trying to take our jobs. Now, Bob Casey just came out today against the Biden plan to ban natural gas stoves. Remember, it was a big conspiracy theory. The whole idea that the Democrats were going to ban gas stoves, they were coming for your gas stoves. You remember how everybody said that was a conspiracy theory, only we found that it was true, that the little troll Richard Trumka Jr., who runs the National Consumer Product Safety Commission, which sounds like something out of a communist country and should be disbanded. No, he actually wrote a memo saying that his agency had the authority to ban gas stoves because of asthma. And you know what? He's not wrong on the fact that they have the authority to ban them. Because sadly, we have turned over so much of our country to the executive branch, where the executive branch now just makes rules and edicts, bans things. They have the same weight as a law passed by Congress, but they're not passed by Congress. They're rules made by bureaucrats. Hopefully, the Supreme Court will remedy this in the Chevron case, which will be decided on this summer. But in the meantime, Senator Bob Casey, this is from the Delaware Valley Journal, was one of three Democrats to side with the Republicans and passed a resolution to block the Biden administration's new efficiency rules on gas furnaces. But in 2021, Casey voted against the measure. This was a measure to protect consumer choice and stop Biden from banning gas appliances, and Casey voted against that. But in a 50-45 vote, the resolution declares Congress's opposition to new Biden administration regulations that would effectively ban non-condensing gas furnace models. And Casey voted with the majority, but he was one of only three Democrats to vote yes. That tells you how incredibly unpopular the green nonsense is with voters, particularly in an energy-rich state like Pennsylvania, where natural gas is key. Donald Trump is going to win Pennsylvania in part because of the fact that Joe Biden is putting an export ban on natural gas. Natural gas is huge. It's Pennsylvania's number one economy outside of agriculture. And these guys in the energy sector get it. You know, they get it now. The Democrats are coming for natural gas, just like they came after coal, just like they're coming after after oil. And they're not going to be fooled this time around. They're not. The other thing, too, is in addition to food prices and skyrocketing energy prices, try buying a home. I mean, good luck with that. In our case, we bought a home recently, and it was a situation where when we sold the house we were living in, we got an offer in 24 hours, all cash. I think we got, I don't know, $75,000 above asking price, and we took it right away. The house we bought was more expensive than the house we were in, but we needed to expand. We have three kids, and so, you know, we needed more room. And we were fortunate because the house that we bought was on the market for a couple weeks. Typically, houses go, you know, in 24 hours, 48 hours. I mean, you know, so we were able to get a house we could afford. But we're paying more in the interest rates for the mortgage because the interest rates are so much higher than the one we had. We had a 2.5% interest rate, and now I think we're at 6.5% or something. So for a lot of people, they can't move because there's no inventory, which then affects prices. Because if there's no inventory, but you have a lot of demand, that means every time a house goes on the market, typically it's gone like that. And it goes for higher than asking price, way much higher. And people are priced out of the market. And then you add in the interest rates for the mortgages. And it's just, so people are stuck and they can't leave. It's like that scene in A Bronx Tale. Now yous can't leave. Here's NBC reporting on how unaffordable it is to buy a home in this country in Joe Biden's America. Cut 19.
Since 2022, it's been harder to buy a home than any other period in the last decade. The index accounts for factors like median home sale prices, which over the last year are up 6%. Mortgage rates also climbing around 7% for a 30-year fixed, but also accounts for available inventory, still tight, but getting a little better, up almost 13% nationwide. The NBC News Home Buyer Index grades the overall difficulty of home buying on a scale from 0 to most difficult, 100. In April, that measure was 82.4, near an all-time high. Translation, the average home is almost $70,000 more than the average household can afford.
That's Joe Biden's America. In addition to that, of course, we have people who are coming into this country illegally. The invasion of the southern border, something Trump talked about during his Bronx rally, and something a lot of the voters who you heard from who slammed this administration and a big concern of theirs was, in fact, immigration, illegal immigration. Well, here's a migrant, an illegal immigrant, who tells Fox's, I think it's Bill Malusian, if I'm not mistaken, just how easy it is to cross the southern border. Piece of cake. No problemo. Cut 17.
Did you have to pay a cartel?
Yes.
How much?
Around 10,000.
10,000?
Yes. In fact, the American people is right. Completely true. Who come into this country, they don't know. Well, okay, I'm good. But how if they're not good? How they're killer, psychopath, else? Mm-hmm. No guarantee of that. Why? Like no security, no security check. No background check.
No security check, no background check. You're worrying about who's crossing the border?
Yes. They are, of course, me, because I'm like, people, I'm not look normal.
Yeah, it's how it goes. And that's what Trump said. You know, he said in his rally, he said that African-Americans and Hispanic-Americans are impacted the most by illegal immigration. And he's right. He's absolutely right by that. Byron Donalds, my man, stood up yesterday at the rally in the Bronx and made a bold declaration. Cut 15.
Listen, the word is that Donald J. Trump's going to be here in a couple of minutes. That's the word. And so I think it's really important right now to let all of New York know that the Bronx is now MAGA country.
There you go. MAGA country. All right. So Biden's got problems and the economy is the big one. No question about it. We got a lot more to come on the Dana Show, our Friday pre-Memorial Day edition. Don't go away.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we got to chat about the Trump trial, which will resume on Tuesday. Where do things go from here? I'll have a guest on the show around 2:35 or so to break it down for us. Now that the judge has come up with the instructions to the jury, what's next? But first, I got five things for you. Let's do it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Bark Air. B-A-R-K. Bark. Not as in tree bark, but as in doggy bark. Bark Air launches as the first ever airline catered to dogs. We're here to revolutionize flying for dogs, a 100% totally real airline for dogs, the company's website says. It's launching on Thursday, and it's real, and it is meant for people who are tired of having their dogs crammed into crates in cargo. But it does want to put them front and center, and it's probably going to be for people who, you know, got a little bit of cashish. No one under 18 years old is allowed to fly on Bark Air. A woman was arrested for battering a man with a cinnamon roll. Florida woman, shocking, was arrested Tuesday night after allegedly striking a man in the neck with a thrown cinnamon roll. Those things can hurt, you know, especially if they're hot out of the oven. But what a waste of a perfectly good cinnamon roll. And of course, this happened at a transitional housing facility in St. Petersburg, Florida. I don't know if the icing really got to him or not. Could have had an allergic reaction. You just never know. This is a fascinating story. In England, and probably where we're headed in this country, a woman was fined 200 euros by the council warden for accidentally dropping McDonald's chips, which were eaten by seagulls. Yeah, I don't know if that's 200 pounds, I guess, because it's the UK. I don't know. Anyway, she dropped some chips. The seagulls ate them. You're not supposed to feed the seagulls, so she was fined. Actually, I'm okay with that only because the seagulls are basically rats with wings, and people do feed them on the beach, and you shouldn't do that because these annoying things keep coming after you. I'd be okay with shooting them on the beach. You know what I'm saying? I think it'd be a fun activity. You could raise some money in the boardwalk games instead of just shooting water through a thing. Shoot a seagull. I'm just, you know, saying. I know that the animal cruelty people may not like it. But speaking of animal cruelty, an ambulance collided with a moose early Sunday in Canada. But here's the thing. It was responding to another crash also involving a moose. And a man crashed into a moose. And then as the ambulance responded to go save the man who crashed into the moose, it crashed into another moose. Because that's Canada and they've got a lot of moose eye? I don't know if it's moose eye or is it? I'm not quite sure. But sadly, the man did die after his vehicle collided with a moose in northern New Brunswick, Canada. They are beautiful, magnificent creatures. If you ever get to see one in person, they are. But they're big. So how you miss one, I don't really know. I'm not sure, but anyway. All right, coming up, the Trump trial. Where do we go from here? Back in court on Tuesday, the jurors after a long break. What will they remember? What will the instructions be? What are closing arguments going to be like? Where does this case go now? And what's the latest with Georgia? We'll talk about all these things straight ahead. It is the Dana Show. Don't go away.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So next week, it's hard to believe, but we will be back in court. Yes, we will. Welcome back to the Dana Show. It's me, Rich Zeoli, in for Dana, where I normally do the daily afternoon show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in Philadelphia. it's Memorial Day weekend, but before you know it, the cameras will be back on, reporters will be outside the courthouse, and Trump will be back in court. Closing arguments next week. Here to help discuss it with me is a guy who was a prosecutor, is now a criminal defense attorney, David Gelman. Counselor, thank you for making time today on this nationally syndicated program. How are you?
Hey, Rich, I'm good. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Doing all right. I know you've been around the country talking on behalf of the Trump campaign about this issue of this court case in New York. Let's just get to the basics of what we can expect on Tuesday when everybody comes back. Now, has the judge officially given the jury the instructions, or will he do that on Tuesday? How does the process work?
So, he will be giving them on Tuesday. And what will happen, Rich, is first, the defense, Donald Trump's attorneys, they're going to be giving their closing arguments. So anticipate, I'd say, 45 minutes to an hour for them. After that, the prosecution goes, and they're going to give their closing arguments. Again, another 45 minutes to an hour. After that, the judge is going to give the jury instructions to the jury. And that's going to be very important because that's going to, number one, lay out exactly what the jury has to determine whether Donald Trump is innocent or guilty. But number two, and the more important thing is, there's the intent aspect. Did Donald Trump actually do what they are alleging he did, or did he say he did certain things? So the intent aspect of the jury instructions are going to be critical in this. And that'll take probably about an hour. After that part, then it's going to be all hands on deck, and the jury is going to go into the deliberation room, and they're going to be deliberating and debating, and who knows how long that could take. It could take a day. It could take a couple days.
Now, this is fascinating. The jury instructions themselves, when the judge delivers them to the jury, you're saying that process alone could take an hour?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, number one, you got to remember, there's about 34 felonies that President Trump is being charged with. But number two, these jury instructions are very complex. So look, unless you're a nerd who went to law school like me, you're probably not going to understand most of them. So the judge really has to break them down so like an 8-year-old can understand them. And I'm being 100% honest and not even being funny about that part. So there's so many different areas in these jury instructions that legally the judge has to say. Now, the funny thing is, Rich, and you and I have talked about this before. Look, I've done a ton of jury trials, and I've had jurors tell me after trials, they contacted me and said, about the jury instructions. They don't even remember them. As soon as they get into that deliberation room, after like a minute or two, and they start talking amongst their co-jurors, they forget the jury instructions. So hopefully they'll remember them, but there's a good possibility that once they get in there and start talking, they're going to be like, what jury instructions?
In your experience, David Gelman, as both a prosecutor and as a criminal defense attorney, do jurors get swayed by closing arguments? I mean, this is a long break for them. They're coming back to court on Tuesday after a long holiday weekend. For many of them, they may have already decided in their mind whether Trump's guilty or not. But how often do jurors get swayed by those closing arguments? I know in movies and TV shows, it's very dramatic. And, you know, you have these big sweeping moments where the jurors, you know, go into the room and they've been completely seduced by what either the prosecution or the defense had to say in those closing arguments. But really, how often do they move jurors?
You know, Rich, if it's a close case, then closing arguments, I think, are key. And don't get me wrong. I think closing arguments are very important in anything in any case. But in a close case, they're really going to hound in and they're going to really pay attention. If it's not a close case, if they've already made up their mind, which in this situation, I have a pretty sneaky suspicion, just like you, that they probably have already made up their mind, especially having 6 days off. So I don't think closings are going to be as important, if you will. The prosecution and the defense, they're both going to just kind of summarize their whole case in 45 minutes to an hour. So that alone is kind of difficult to do. But remember, you know, again, 6 days off, they've had plenty of time to think about this. And I'm sure even though they're not allowed to be looking at TV or radio or talking to people, you know, you got to be, you know, a moron to not think that they aren't doing that. So I think they have a good idea.
I was going to say, I mean, jurors are sequestered, but they're home, right? I mean, they're home with their families. They're like everybody else now, enjoying their Memorial Day weekend. They're going to have friends over. They're going to be talking. They're going to see things on TV. So I guess the next question I have is, during the closing arguments, is either side allowed to reintroduce anything, or I should say, introduce anything for the first time, or is it literally only things you've discussed so far in the trial?
No. So if they have not introduced that already, that cannot be introduced at closing. Closing is just a summation, really, of everything that you have said and done and uncovered in the actual trial. So if they try to bring in anything, that will be objected to immediately. Now, look, this is going to be very interesting. The prosecution, they're very objection heavy. So meaning, you know, they objected a ton of times when Robert Costello, the attorney for Michael Cohen, was testifying. If you object in an opening or a closing, the jury's never like that. And judges don't like that either. Although this judge, he's very biased, so he may enjoy the prosecution objecting. But I'll be very curious to see if they do object, because that will be very telling, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the point you made about the judge, Judge Mershon, and I agree with you. I mean, this guy certainly seems incredibly biased towards the prosecution. Does not seem like he's doing his job of making sure that the rights of the defendant are secure here. But he's got to be aware of the fact that if this jury comes back with a guilty verdict, and I'd be shocked if they did, but that there's going to be an appeal, and a lot of the appeal would rest on procedural issues that happened during the course of the trial, correct?
Yes, that's 100% correct. And there's a ton of procedural issues that have occurred that should have already either triggered a mistrial, or the judge should have done that already. However, you and I both understand that, and I'm sure the viewer and the listeners here understand as well, they don't care about this coming back and being remanded and reversed on appeal. All they care about is one thing: having a G in front of President Trump's name, a guilty guilty plea there, or guilty verdict. That's all they care about. They know that this is going to have to come back in the event that there is a guilty plea or guilty finding. However, I agree. I don't think there's going to be a guilty finding in you know, Manhattan. So I think this is going to be a good resolution for President Trump when and if the verdict does happen.
I would think, David Gelman, I mean, my spidey sense tells me we're probably looking at a hung jury here. I have a hard time believing there won't be at least one person on that jury who just thinks Trump's guilty of something, and that this is their way to get justice. It's Manhattan we're talking about here. It's not Staten Island. And I also have a hard time believing that you're going to be able to convince 12 people here that he's committed a crime when I don't even know what the crime is. I don't think anybody knows what the crime is. So I think a hung jury is a win. And then if that happens, I mean, theoretically, Alvin Bragg could bring charges again. I mean, I doubt he would, but you never know with this guy. He's a lunatic. But a hung jury is a win, right?
You know, Spider-Man, you're exactly correct. I don't think that there is any, number one, this should be a not guilty. But because of there is reasonable doubt, and reasonable doubt is if you have any inkling that President Trump did not do what he is alleged to what it's alleged that he's done, and there's so much reasonable doubt here, it's incredible. But because, like you said, we are in Manhattan, we are in very blue territory, and it's not, you know, the other boroughs, just Manhattan. I have to think you're correct when we're saying, yeah, there has to be at least one person who is being true to themselves and really, you know, is being honest and says, you know what, I understand I might not like President Trump and I might not like what he's doing or saying all, but there's no way he did this. Or, you know, because Michael Cohen is a liar and, you know, he can't even tell the truth when he's trying to tell the truth, I don't believe what happened here, and I cannot vote to convict President Trump.
All right, now here's the question, and this is a close one here. Who was worse for the prosecution, Stormy Daniels or Michael Cohen?
You know what? I don't think it's close at all. Michael Cohen. I mean, this guy, when he walked into the courthouse and put his hand on the Bible, I'm surprised there wasn't a fire, because This guy cannot tell the truth if his life depended on it. In fact, if you remember the last day that he testified, the first thing that Todd Blanche asked him was, have you spoken to the press about anything that you testified about already? And he said, no. And Todd Blanche asked him again, are you sure about that? He said, well, I did have a couple reporters call me and ask me if I'm doing all right. I mean, the first question, he can't even get through the first question. It boggles my mind. I'm telling you, he was a train wreck for the prosecution. If they knew he was not going to be good, I think. But if they knew he wasn't going to be that good, oh my goodness. I don't think they would have brought the case.
How about the fact, even with the hatred? How about the fact that he admitted that he stole money from Trump? And that right there is over in my eyes. I mean, there's no credibility. The guy had no credibility going in. But then you find out he's a liar and a thief.
It's a great combination, isn't it? I mean, and I don't think the prosecution knew either that he stole money. I think they found out just like we all found out, because if they did, they probably would have brought it up ahead of time and kind of taken the sting out of the cross-examination part of it. So that really makes me think that they didn't even know about it, which is, you know, not good on their part for their investigation, in my opinion.
I mean, you got to think to yourself that this entire case and the salaciousness of Stormy Daniels and, you know, talking about condom use and everything like that. I mean, you got to think that was the whole point, which was the process being the punishment to just try to embarrass Trump and try to humiliate him in court. I know that they do want to find him guilty, obviously, but the process itself, I mean, it took him off the campaign trail. AOC said the quiet part out loud when she said he's got this basically, you know, electronic ankle monitor on. He can't go anywhere, so he's got to be in the South Bronx. She said the quiet part out loud. This trial was designed to keep him off the field in the middle of the game. So they've achieved that. But if Trump walks out of there a free man, I mean, in Trump's way, I mean, that's going to be spun as such a victory. If they come back and find him guilty, knowing Trump, he's still going to spin that as a win because that's just the way he is. And I think his supporters are just going to double down and say, this is ridiculous. You've got this Soros-funded prosecutor here, and this is an outrageous outcome. And either way, I don't see even a guilty verdict, which I think is unlikely, but I don't see that hurting him with his supporters and with even swing voters. I don't think people are paying attention. John Fetterman said that quiet part out loud when he said, I don't even think people understand what this case is about.
Yeah, well, you know what? Fetterman, you know, Uncle Fester's right. And I also agree. You know, I also agree with your analysis. Either way, you know, Donald Trump is going to make lemonade out of lemons. It's going to happen. You see it time and time again. Look at this trial, perfect example. They wanted to take him off of the campaign by doing this for election interference. What does he do? He goes to a bodega. He goes to Ground Zero to construction sites. He has a rally in the Bronx, and he's getting more publicity now than he probably ever would have. So I think that this is a game changer. It's an absolute win, and they're seeing that what's going on right now is a politicization of the DOJ specifically to go after President Trump to make sure that he doesn't win the election. But it's backfiring 110% on them right now because everybody sees that, number one, the trial, there's nothing there, and that New York City and Alvin Bragg, instead of going after Donald Trump, maybe go after the actual criminals making New York City not a very safe place to go right now. So I agree with you 100%. This is going to be a win one way or another.
Yeah, well said, my friend. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. GelmanLawFirm.com, G-E-L, GelmanLawFirm.com. David Gelman, thanks for joining me here on The Dana Show. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rich. Be good.
And we'll be right back to close it out before we head out for the long weekend. Don't go away.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been a great time filling in for Dana today. I hope you and your family have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. As soon as I sign off here, I normally would be doing my show in Philly from 3 to 7. But since the kids are off from school today, we're going to do a little family day. Should be a nice weekend. And like I said earlier, please take a moment to remember those who've given the ultimate sacrifice for our country, for our freedom, because we can't have a free country without people who are willing to serve. And for many of them, the ultimate sacrifice is is something their family has to deal with and go through, and it's something we have to remember on Monday, on Memorial Day. So let's do that. But let's also have a lot of fun and enjoy our time with our family and friends, because that's really important to do as well. I know that it's pool season. So we don't have a pool, but we belong to a pool. So we'll be taking the kids to the pool tomorrow. I just hope it's warm. So my daughter, she's 7. She doesn't like going in water that's cold. So it's always a situation wherever we get there. And then, you know, she winds up sitting in the hot tub the whole time. But fingers crossed that the pool's warm already. I don't know. I mean, the Northeast, it's been a little tricky. And if you're listening to the show in Florida or Texas, you got us beat. Oh, speaking of Florida, we did spend a week down there for spring break. We went down to Marathon Key. I love the Keys. Oh, it's great. Just love the freedom. Speaking of Florida, the leading odds are on Ron DeSantis for being Trump's pick for VP. The problem with that, though, is there's an electoral college problem if you pick somebody from the same state. But that's for another show. In the meantime, Steve, let's talk about something stupid, shall we?
Oh, man, if you haven't seen this yet, this is probably the worst answer. I was going to do something political, but it's the end of the week, so let's just do something happy here. This might have been the worst answer in in Jeopardy history. So, or excuse me, Wheel of Fortune history. He went on to spin the wheel in this one.
Tavares, right in the butt.
What?
No. Blake.
This is the best.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, and the amazing part about that is that they kept it in post. It wasn't like it was a live show. They could have edited it out, but they kept it in. Gotta love Pat Sajak. Have a great weekend. God bless, and thank you for listening. Follow me on Twitter, @RichZeoli. Thank you.